Is it normal to pee when you sneeze? Can you lift weights while pregnant? What's the best way to start working out again after having a baby? Join us this week as we talk with pelvic floor physical therapist, Dr. Lauren Malari-Snyder, to dispel common myths, discuss dysfunction versus health, vaginal versus cesarean birth recovery, prolapse, urinary and fecal incontinence, and so, so much more. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about.
And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Okay, here we are with Dr. Lauren at Thrive Physical Therapy in San Diego. You were my physical therapist in 2016?
Yeah,
2016. But then we met at an innate postpartum care course thing for 4 days. Yes, which innate postpartum care is this idea. It's run by a midwife named Rochelle Seguia Garcia.
Seguia Garcia.
Okay. And she is just a genius. I don't know if that's what you thought, but I thought that the whole thing was amazing. And it was really cool. It was some doulas, you were the only pelvic floor PT. Or a PT in general. I think I was the only med student because I was there as a student at the time. But it was really teaching about what are the worldly traditions and the things that we see across time and across the globe for how postpartum women were cared for in other cultures, and you know, the stark difference between what's happening in America now and most modern day cultures. And she was really teaching us and guiding us to be more integrative in our practice and approach towards postpartum women and how to do it. And it was fantastic. So that's how we met. And then I ended up coming to you, and then we built a little friendship. And you're just your account, it's at Thrive Physical Therapy, is so like funny. It's like a comedy show sometimes, but it's also very, very informative. And so I'm super appreciative of it, and I'm happy to have you on.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yes, good. We're really happy to have you. And you are 29 weeks pregnant with your first baby.
Yes. Yeah. He is moving and grooving right now. So if you hear like every now and then, that's what's happening.
I know. Well, and the good thing is that most of our audience has been there. And so solidarity to you. They understand. And I'm not quite there yet. Mine are like the little soft, like pop, pop. You know, yeah. I'm stoked if I feel something that's maybe perceivable on the outside still at 21 weeks here. So we'll get there. Okay. I just wanted to read a little bio about you so that the listeners know, you know, who you are, what your gig is, and then we'll kind of dive in. We have a lot of questions to get through. So it's good. Let me read this. So it says, fascinated by art and science of movement, Dr. Lauren began her career as a doctor of began her career as a doctor of physical therapy in 2012, focusing on sports and orthopedic issues, and quickly recognized the need to give specific focus to pregnant and postpartum people. Since then, she has been working with women who are postpartum, pregnant, active, or have any pelvic floor concerns. Her goals are to educate people on the symbiotic relationship between their pelvic area and the rest of their body, thank goodness, and to help them be as active, strong, and confident as they want to be, because she believes our bodies are meant to do more than just be, they're meant to thrive. And that is such a beautiful sentence. And so many people are just being in their bodies.
Yeah.
Dr. Lauren's postdoctoral studies are focused on female pelvic health and dysfunction, the female athlete, functional manual therapy, innate postpartum traditions, that's the training we did together, postpartum doula training, and visceral mobilization. And this kind of brings up something that I wanted to ask at some point. I might as well just ask it right away, because before the call, we were having a little debrief, and I did not even realize that not all pelvic floor PTs are trained to go internal. I thought that was just a given. And so will you talk about a little bit of just what someone should look for in a pelvic floor PT, in your opinion? And so when I say going internal, I mean going intravaginal. Yes, there's a lot of things we can address outside of that, but sometimes you need to be able to feel what's happening, or maybe there's a trigger point or an adhesion or some sort of specific tightness, correct?
Yeah, totally. So like we even do virtual visits, but yes, internal is like the most accurate, right? So pelvic floor therapy, I say that because physical therapists aren't the only people who can do it. Occupational therapists can as well. And I believe some nurses, I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on that, but at least they have been in some of the like postdoctorate courses that I've taken. But all these postdoctorate courses are to teach you how to assess and treat via internal vaginal palpation or even internal anal rectal. Because a lot, your pelvic floor does go back there too, attaches to your tailbone, goes around the rectum. It also goes around the vagina, right? So we can gather some information externally, and that's a really, really great option for people who aren't feeling it. People are having pain. You just don't want to do that because, hey, yeah, it's internal. Like I get that. But I always tell my clients and patients, we can't get 100% understanding of what's going on without an internal assessment. An internal assessment is like one finger in the vagina or rectum, depending on what we're working on. And we'll talk about the vagina to feel the tone of the muscles, meaning if they're like overactive and like really tight, or if they're underactive, feel your ability to contract. You can't get all of that information. So when you're looking for a pelvic floor therapist, I would definitely, if you're interested in having an internal assessment and treatment, ask them if they do internal work. And just like I said, ask them if they do internal assessment and if they do internal treatment, because some will just do the assessment and then kind of be done with that. And if you're doing scar work, right, you can't do that as well externally, or you can't cue someone to, you know, we're on video, but I keep forgetting not everyone is, contract on the left side more than the right side, or the front more than the back, or whatever. It's a lot more. The hands-on does really, really help, in my opinion. And I'm also a manual therapist from the get-go, from school. I went to a very manual-based school. So even in my orthopedics, if I'm treating your knee or your shoulder, I'm doing a lot of hands-on body work, and then the neuromuscular education and exercise too. So I'm sure not everyone would think the same, but that's, you know, what I think.
Well, and for my personal story, which is that I had never been to a physical or a pelvic floor physical therapist prior to giving birth. I don't know, maybe you would have known this without going inside, but when you were doing your internal work on me after I gave birth to my son, was when we realized that I was holding, I think you said at one point it was like 70% tension in my pelvic floor at all times, which really did connect. Sorry, say that again.
I said I should pull up your notes.
Yeah, exactly. Pull up my chart. Let's just read through it. Because I had moments in my birth where my midwife did have her fingers inside me as well. And she was trying to help me connect to the where to push. And mm-hmm. also at one point, I remember her being like, relax, you need to relax. You need to let your vagina bulge out. And it's definitely a very vulnerable and like freaky feeling. So I think that there's a certain level that we probably hold back from that. But I did also very much think that I was completely relaxed and that I was trying to do that. And she just, I remembered her saying that, like, you need to relax. You need to relax right here. And I was like, I am. But when you said that too, I was like, oh my gosh, maybe I don't even realize it. And so that was the thing that you and I worked on, was
you put a finger on it, like literally until you put a finger on it, you don't notice. Like just the same thing. Like you could be walking around with your shoulders up all day until someone goes like, furrowing your brows, that's what it's called, you know, until you like do like a body scan, if anyone's done that, or you go through, like you don't realize it. And I have a pelvic floor therapist as well. And the left posterior side of my pelvic floor is tight. And it took me like 30 minutes within the session to be like, okay, you know, like, you don't know until you know.
Yes.
Not everyone has tight pelvic floor, but go ahead.
It just feels like you're almost going to pee. Like it's hard to find that point.
If you're so used to holding it up all the time.
Yes.
When you let go actually down to normal, yeah, it might feel like you're going to pee, or it might even feel like you're bearing down, but that's actually like, that's your baseline. Like that's where you should be hanging out.
Yes, exactly.
But if it's so foreign to you, of course it's going to feel weird.
Yeah. I think this is so fascinating because it can, not only can it affect the way your birth goes, it's more just the way that the rest of your body is held and recovers afterwards, the way you breathe, the way your posture is, the rest of your musculature, and how over long-term periods of time your body might adapt. adaptation patterns and different tightness here and there, different stuff. And then of course, prolapse as well. We have several questions on here about prolapse. Okay. I also just have to say, this was my most popular question box I think I've ever had.
That. Which is so funny actually, because I put a little question box up on our Instagram too. And I got literally one question.
So I'm what was your question? You go for it.
Either I'm doing a fantastic job and just all of our followers already know everything. I don't have any questions, which I doubt that. But anyway, I was like, this is interesting. So I'm so happy you have so many because I didn't even gather.
Yeah, I think that your followers are definitely more educated on this, right? And mine are like, what is this? What's going on here? And they're learning about it. But so you did have, what was your one question you had? Because it was kind of funny, the one you got. Okay.
What is the puss up that Dr. Lauren's always talking about?
Mm-hmm. So what is that? Tell us about your puss ups.
So puss ups is just, I think, a better word for, or a better saying for Kegels. I see it all the time now on social media and stuff. I can't say that I made it up, but I've been saying it a long time with a couple of my other friends. It's a Kegel, and a Kegel is a pelvic floor contraction, but it's just named after Dr. Kegel. And I just feel like, you know, he's had his time.
Yes.
Male pelvic floors can Kegel too. It's not that like you can't do it as a male. I just think we are talking about them more, and puss ups just, that's just way more fun. And I keep saying I'm gonna make a t-shirt. So don't let me make my t-shirt. Don't go out there and make t-shirts, but I'm gonna do it. It's pelvic floor contraction. Like when you close and lift, like if you were to like pick up a blueberry with your inner labia and then lift it up into your body.
Okay. Yeah. So that actually brings me to, there was a question here that said, let me just find it real fast. It said, I truly have no concept when someone is like, squeeze your pelvic floor and then relax it. Is there hope? So what would you say to this person?
There is hope. This is like where that internal part comes into play. We don't even need to though, because we can use it. You could use a mirror. We can feel externally too. Like say you're wearing like spandex pants and we just palpate like medial to the sit bones. You can feel a little bit of the pelvic floor muscles contracting there. There's layers of the pelvic floor muscles. So you mostly would feel that first layer more towards opening. You wouldn't get to feel that third layer that's deep, that does more of the lifting, but there definitely is hope. And I don't know why you don't feel it. What's very common is that your pelvic floor is already contracted or squeezed. Mm-hmm. And so if it's already squeezed, you can't see me, but I'm showing my big bicep. If your muscle's already squeezed and you go to squeeze it, you can't squeeze it more. So you're not going to feel a change in the tension.
Mm.
And so you just don't feel it. The other option is what a lot of people think is like, oh my gosh, it's so loose, right? Which that is a thing, but it's way less. I think there was a question about that. Like who doesn't have tight pelvic floor these days? It's way less that the pelvic floor is like underactive and quote unquote loose. I don't love that word just because the connotation it has, but just unresponsive more.
Yeah. So what's the deal with that? The second question the same person had was, why do we all have such tight pelvic floors? Like, does anyone in the world not have a tight pelvic floor?
there are some people that don't have tight pelvic floors for sure. I think it's our culture, right? Like we can, and this is a huge thing in the innate postpartum traditions and teachings is like, if we boil it all down to the health of our society and culture as a whole, it's like we need to nurture our mothers so that they're raising the children, you know, it can stem back to that, but our culture, is go, go, go. Mm-hmm. And our culture is fight or flight. And our culture is sympathetic nervous system upregulation. And our culture is just like on all the time. And tighten your jaw and tighten your abs and suck them in. And that all goes along with pelvic floor tension. There's actually a huge correlation between TMJ dysfunctions and pelvic floor. But that's a whole other thing.
Wait, really? That's so fascinating because they say in birth, if you relax your jaw, you relax your cervix and you relax that totally makes sense. Tell us just a little more about that.
Yeah. I can't think of the study right now. I think it's literally like 73% correlation, but like personally, your jaw and your vagina, are two places you can hold tension without people bugging you, right? Like telling you to relax, or cause you have to get on with your day. right? Mm-hmm. So I think that there are two common places. I think there are two common places that our bodies choose to look for stability also. So if you notice, or in our job, we test everyone's strength and range of motion and all of that. And if we find weaknesses in the legs or the hips or the glutes, oftentimes the pelvic floor is overclenched because it's trying to make up, it's trying to do something, right? Your body's going to try as best that it can to help you. So the pelvic floor can clench up. The jaw, the same thing. When you try something really hard, when you get frustrated, right, you clench. So it's just my joke, but not really, is just that it's two places you can hold tension and you can clench without someone stopping you to be like, hey, Morgan, you relax, because you're gonna be like, no thanks, I gotta finish this thing. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Like, if your shoulders were up by your ears, somebody would be like, wow, you look really tense. Or, but nobody can see if your pelvic floor is up in your belly button, you know.
Totally. And then the other side of the cultural thing, beyond like suck in your stomach and go, is the shame around our female parts, right? First of all, we don't get to talk about them. Second of all, if you do talk about them, you're usually shamed for that. And then there's your whole relationship with sexuality, and it goes so deep. I work with a lot of patients actually who have a lot of tension because of their upbringing. Sorry, wow. I don't know how far we want to go into this side of things, but because of their upbringing.
Yeah, that reminds me of vaginismus, the idea of vaginismus, which is where it's like your whole vaginal canal and pelvic floor is just in like a constant contraction. Nothing can really seem to penetrate. Sex is very painful. And a lot of that, almost maybe all of it, I don't know, is usually trauma-based or mental, emotional, from what you're saying, like shame, just us as little girls not really getting good sex education or none at all, or being taken advantage of, or being told that we're dirty, or bad connotations around masturbation, or all these different things. Religion's interplay there is strong usually. And it can all and then just with our culture and pop culture, you know, if you're a woman who sleeps around too much, then you're a slut. If you don't do it enough, then you're a prude. It's like, there's no possible way where we can win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you take all of those things into account, and then you also take, oh, maybe you just walk funny. And that's like where we come into play, you know, and you walk and you're not using your right glute when you're pushing off with your back leg. So you're using your pelvic floor instead. Right. Uh-huh. So like the assessment is so important. And of course, they usually all intermingle.
Yeah. Right?
There's multiple things, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's not a past traumatic experience or anything having to do with your nervous system or your psychological side of things. It can just be that your muscles, there's an imbalance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or there's an issue with your nerves that are coming from your low back and sacrum that infiltrate and supply your pelvis, your pelvic floor, all of the tissues of the vulva. And there can be an issue there. So where physical therapists come into play is there, because you know we're not talk therapists or psychologists or anything like that, but we come across it a lot because it's all
connected. So there was a question that kind of leads me to the when should we start doing pelvic floor exercises in pregnancy? Or there was a question that was like, how do I get started during the preconception period? Or there was another question that was like, when should you start it? All of these things are, you know, similar issue. It's like people are wanting to know, when do I start pelvic floor PT, like in the spectrum between preconception, pregnancy, and beyond? You know, what would you say is ideal? And then maybe what's ideal plus most realistic, or, you know, however you want to.
Pelvic floor PT is not only for people who want to get pregnant or who are pregnant or are postpartum. So it really doesn't have to do anything with pregnancy. So you can get started as soon as you want. And that can be just to, because I think there also was a question of like, is it worth it? Well, I don't know. What do you want to know? What do you want to know about your pelvic floor? Because you could come and say, hey, I'm not trying to get pregnant, or it's like pre-time, right? I am going to try to get pregnant, and get an understanding of your baseline. Are you that person that has a super tight pelvic floor? Which actually a very tight pelvic floor, or tight pelvic floor in general, is rendered weak. So tight does not equal strong. On the other side, you quote unquote have loose pelvic floor, right? Underactive, low tone, which is also going to be weak, of course, right? Because it's not responding, it's not contracting. But neither one of those are going to contract well. An overly contracted pelvic floor or an underly contracted. You know what I mean?
I'm following.
following with my hand signals here. So they're both rendered weak. So what we shoot for pelvic health is your ability to do a contraction, AKA the Kegel, AKA the puss up. Now, hopefully I can just say puss up from here on out.
Yeah.
Your ability to do the puss up, your ability to relax back down to your baseline, and your ability to lengthen or stretch the pelvic floor, which is a bear down. The pelvic floor itself doesn't bear down. Like the muscles don't create a bear down movement. The muscles are just relaxed enough that the pressure from your abs and your air can push.
That's really good to know.
Yeah. So for birth, your pelvic floor muscles aren't actually performing the bear down. They're allowing the bear down to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Pelvic floor muscles, when they perform, they contract.
Okay. Right, and then they need to be able to relax in order to be fully healthy.
Correct. So you have to have that full excursion, those three things, the contract, the back to normal, your baseline, and then the stretch or lengthen. There's all kinds of words for it. And that's for everyone. So your pelvic floor is part of your core. We all know your core is important. Your pelvic floor is important, one, because it's part of your core, but also because it holds all of your sexual reproductive organs. It has everything, has a lot to do with your sex and orgasm too. So is it worth it? Is it worth it?
Depends on,
I had to. So learning those three things, you can start as early as you want. We have a program here at Thrive that is for pregnant people through like pregnant through postpartum. And we start that at 20 weeks.
Okay.
You can come whenever the heck you want, but I set it at 20 weeks because that's usually when you start to like feel some things, right? Whether that might be a little shift in your pelvis, a little bit of a tiny ache or whatever. And you also have, now you have 20 weeks to figure your shit out. If you do have a tight pelvic floor and you need to figure out how to relax it, or if you are standing with a posture that's going to lead to even more tight pelvic floor. Usually that's the butt tucked under type of thing, which is hard to do when you're pregnant, because you have to adjust your posture to counterbalance the baby, but it gives you usually enough time. So we see people during pregnancy up until like 38-ish weeks, from 20 to 38, a couple times there, and then postpartum virtually at first. Usually most people take us up on that because they're home. And then 6 weeks, we usually do like that internal pelvic floor assessment if you're ready for it, depending on if you had any tearing or anything like that. And if you just straight up are ready for it, we can wait to do the internal or never do the internal. But in pregnancy, that's when our program starts. You can start as early as you want because you're gathering information,
mm-hmm.
right? And your pelvic floor is going to be acting a certain way. And we'll be like, hey.
Okay, that's great. So, I mean, would you say there is benefit then to getting some prenatal, meaning during pregnancy, pelvic floor assessment and treatment?
Totally. We don't usually do like internal work until third try, just for safety reasons, but also we keep in contact with your midwife or your doctor and with you. And if everyone feels comfortable and you've been cleared, you know, for penetrative intercourse anyway, and like baby's waters are all intact and everything, it's one finger, sometimes two, if we want to check both walls at the same time. But we also know our way around there. And like, it's very,
very not going to cause labor to start is what you're saying.
No. So we can totally get a lot of information without doing internal, but if you're comfortable with it, yeah, we can. But if you're all good, we usually just wait till third because
Why not? And you know, you were talking about the butt tucked under kind of posture, and it just reminded me of breech babies. And this wasn't on our list, but I just wanted to ask if you thought that there was anything to do with maybe the formation of the pelvic floor, the tightness and stuff, that has any play on why some women might be more prone to carrying a breech baby. I don't know. Maybe there's nothing to do with that, but what do you think?
I totally think that there is an effect. I can't say that I know all the research on it or anything, but I've actually been asked or told if I do spinning babies, because a lot of the work that we do in physical therapy is mobility of the hips and mobility of the pelvis to open the pelvis and kind of rearrange things. I don't do spinning babies. I love it. I just haven't done the practice, but or the teachings learned about it more so than I've just learned in the world. But yeah, I mean, function, what is it? Function dictates, form dictates, form dictates function, and vice versa.
Yeah. Right? And
so we do that all day with people who even aren't pregnant, right? So yeah, if you tend to tuck your butt under and tighten your pelvic floor, that just makes less space on the backside. So now the baby has less space over there. Or now maybe you have a tight right hip, so now there's less space over there. And then you walk with your pelvis tilted. Yep. Now they're like, sorry, you can't see me.
Now their head's to the side. Now they're asynclitic. Yeah, all of this matters. It really does. I mean, this is all of the optimal fetal positioning things, and like, you know, seeing chiropractors or staying fit or active, you know, walking and squats and all of these hip opening things, like you're saying, and then spinning babies can be a component of that as well. If it's appropriate for you, you know, you'll have to talk about it with your doctor or whatever, but it's just this idea that the shape of our pelvis, the baby has to navigate that. And so if there's musculature or bones or whatever, usually musculature though, that is affecting the way that things are moving, sure, it's going to put them in a funky position. And yeah, I guess it may not be, oh yeah, definitely this is going to cause a breach. Of course not. Like it might, there's lots of factors that go to that, but.
We all know it's not us, right?
But like right.
We can take some matters into our hands. And like you said, a lot of it is muscular. So that's where we physical therapists thrive. Look at that. Thrive. In making those little like movements to your pelvis to help like realign it or align it into a different position, whether that be through joint mobilization or loosening some muscles so you can actually get there into mm-hmm. this different position and help open the pelvis if that's where we're at in the timeline. You don't want to open it too soon, right? But change the pelvis position with joint mobilizations or soft tissue work, all this body work. But then also muscles move bones. So if you don't retrain them to act differently, you're just going to go right back to it. And in a pregnant body, we're changing like every single day. So we have, if we're aware, we can then adjust and, you know, move that hip differently than you did yesterday, which is going to over time contribute to a different position. I can't say better, but usually something is happening because the way that you've been doing it for this long has led you here. So we're then going to change it. We were talking a little bit about this before, like your gut health, right? If you're having gut issues and you don't change anything, I'm guessing things aren't going to change, right? Or if you go back to those things that messed you up in the first place. So that like retraining, I guess first learning what your muscles and your joints and where everything is in place, first learning where that is and then retraining a different pattern and having the mobility to do that new pattern via body work it's like all encompassing, and then doing the exercises to get more repetition so it becomes stronger and also just more like automatic. Because every time you stand up, are you going to stand up and tuck your butt under and throw your hips forward? Because that's honestly easiest. It is. But if that's contributing to your tight pelvic floor or your tailbone to get pulled really far underneath, which is another thing that we do, is tailbone like mobilizations to get that thing out of the way to make as much room for baby. Or are you sitting on your butt all the time, you know, tucking your tailbone under? Like if you don't change those, it's not going to change.
Yeah. And like we were talking about beforehand too, is this is like a management, the idea of like healing, you know, maybe the question had come up, can I truly heal a diastasis, or which is the split in the abs, or a pelvic floor problem? And we were talking about with that gut health analogy, you know, it's like always management. It's like, yeah, sure, you can heal it. You can correct things back to a baseline for now until maybe there's another insult or until something happens. And so you're always sort of, and this is just analogous to everything in life. You know, you don't ever really just do something one time and then it's over and it lasts forever. It's not usually the way that goes. Yeah. It's an active participation constantly. And so these are also lifelong skills. That's one thing that I wanted to take away, or I wanted to emphasize, I guess, was one of my takeaways working with you was just, I remember we had a postpartum appointment after my daughter was born too. And most of that appointment was about my body mechanics for picking her up. Cause you were, you saw me pick her up and you were like, no, you were like, no, you're not doing that anymore. And I didn't like realize what I was doing properly, but I was kind of doing that thing where I sort of like stuck my, I like collapsed into my lower back on one side, you know, like my left side, she was an infant. And I stuck my belly and my hips out to kind of make a shelf instead of using the strength of my arms and like keeping my body straight, because it was just easier to sort of dump into this weird sort of like backwards C shape to support her. And those types of skills and that kind of thing that you learn from sorts of these sorts of appointments can last with you forever, you know, and you can use them in all kinds of different ways. And just understanding your body mechanics, it's not always just, oh, I need to recover from this particular birth or this particular one-time thing. It's like how to move properly in life, you know, how to pick up the car seat, those annoying infant car seats. I hate them. They are so hard to hold, you know, and then there's a 15-pound baby in there and your body's all wonkadoo anyway. It's so anyway, it's my point is this, that this is a constant management, like you're saying. And so it takes skills and sometimes a therapist and sometimes a hands-on to reorganize the way that your muscles are pulling on the bone. And then the way that your movement patterns, are you just going right back to it? Is it going to be good for 4 months and then you forget? Are you going to continue? Is it going to be a whole new trajectory for your life? Like it takes work. We got this way through years and years of moving the way that we did. And then of course, birth is now this huge event. And so there's a lot of questions about like particularly C-section recovery. So what would you say? So it says what pelvic floor support and exercises is needed for a vaginal birth versus a cesarean birth? And we have several cesarean questions. So we can kind of go into that for a little while and we'll circle back around. There's so many different questions here, but let's kind of talk about recovery, vaginal recovery, C-section recovery. You as a pelvic floor PT and in your experience with your clients, what are some of the things that you want people to keep in mind or some like tips and tricks, different ideas that they need to be thinking about, some stuff that can happen, et cetera?
Yeah. Okay. So on the recovery side, not the exercise prep side.
Well, maybe let's do both. Actually, let's start logical. It would make sense to start in chronological order. So, okay. The prep side, there is some questions about that too. So we might as well just cover them. When should we start doing pelvic floor exercises in pregnancy? And like, what could we be doing or what are some daily things we should be doing? I'm overwhelmed with info. People are really, really confused by all of this.
Yeah. There's a ton of info. Okay. Deep breath.
That's a big question.
Get me back on track if I veer off. Prep, whether you're planning for a vaginal or cesarean birth is pretty dang similar because you're carrying this baby. I just spit everywhere. Carrying this baby for 10 months and your body is changing. So whether they come out vaginally or through cesarean, you still have to prep your body for those 10 months. And as you know, your ligaments and everything, everything gets a little bit more loosey-goosey. And so you want to have strong muscles to make up for the fact that your joints are going to be a little bit more loose. So prep is, yeah, to keep up your strength, to keep up your, this is not a time to like hit new exercise goals, but you want to like move. And you want to keep some strength, particularly in the glutes.
Okay.
Your glutes and your quads and your hamstrings, so your thigh muscles, and then your core and your pelvic floor. I say that regarding your core and pelvic floor, yes, I want them to be strong, but remember, tight and strong aren't the same thing.
Ooh, yes. Say it again for those in the back.
Tight and strong aren't the same thing. So particularly, let's say we're talking about your core. doing some core exercises that work for you, which are going to be there aren't things that you can and can't do as far as core exercises. There's how you do it. So there is a wide range depending on your level, your style of exercise that you like, and what positions are comfortable for you. So if you have a diastasis where it's that widening of the linea alba in the front, if you have a, which everyone does during pregnancy, so just, it's okay. It has to happen. What you want to look out for is the coning or tenting, which like along, I hope, again, people can't see you, but along the linea negra, actually along that line, if you see your abs like pushing up into like a little tent or a little cone, we don't want that to happen. That's like air pressure coming through. And that's just unnecessary pressure on the linea alba, which is a fascia. That is just unnecessary, right? So you can do whatever core stuff you want to do so long as you don't see any coning or tenting. Okay. And also if you're still able to breathe.
Okay, you don't want to hold your breath. If you see any coning or tenting, like say you're laying on your back and you were going to do like your knees are bent, and you're bringing like one knee at a time to your chest or something like really gentle. But when you do that, you see that there's this line of tissue sort of pushing up in the center of your belly from your pubic bone up towards like your ribs. It's like a line in that direction. If you're seeing that, or if you're having to hold your breath during the exercise, these are inappropriate for you right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One way to you can try to like get rid of that, the coning or tenting, is to exhale and pull your core in at the same time. So you can think of it like if your belly is a balloon and you exhale the air out of it, you're kind of deflating your balloon. That can help you have a little bit less pressure. But again, you're going to have this separation of the abs. I don't really love that word because they're not like, oh my gosh, two different pieces. The linea alba is still intact. It's just thinned out. When it's not intact and it's like there's a cut through it, then that's a hernia. That's different. But yes, if your example, you're laying down, you bring up your head or you bring up your one leg and you see that cone, that tent, you can try to re-engage, exhale, pull your core in. But if you still can't do it, then that's just not the one for you. And you just move on and it's fine.
Okay.
We do the same thing postpartum. We do all the reassessments, but your ability to contract your pelvic floor, your core muscles during whatever exercise is just as important as your ability to then relax.
You're reminding me to do this like right now. My abs were so tight just now. Maybe because I'm like, you know, interview with you, but I would not have set like thought that I was literally just holding my whole abdomen like up and in. I had no idea.
A lot of people do that like right under the ribs, like at the top of their abs. A lot of people just do that subconsciously. I do that. And so multiple times a day, I'm just like, relax, let it go.
Yeah.
And that's amazing to do. You don't want to relax, let it go when you're about to go pick up. Well, you're not picking up Gage, but you know, when you're about to go pick up something, mm-hmm. you do want to train your core on then. So you can use those opportunities as your core workout, especially if you're pregnant, because it's heavy, your belly's heavy, turning your core on, pulling your belly button inward and upward, exhaling at the same time, those two things as your, I don't know, whatever, getting yourself
like off blocks or something. Like, groceries maybe. Okay. But so are you supposed to also do a little puss up in that moment? Then my core is going in, I'm exhaling, I'm pulling up my, I'm pulling up my pussy. I mean, I am, right? But yeah, I'm doing my puss up and then I'm like reaching and I'm holding this all. And then I stand back up, like say it's like, you know, a couple of groceries off the ground or whatever. And I pick them back up and then I relax it all. Yeah.
Then you can relax. You can relax it all unless you're still like, now you're unloading the groceries into the thing, right?
I'm holding the weight still. Okay, you're right. So I'm still active and engaged. I have my core and my pelvic floor and my breath all doing something during the motion.
Yeah, I'm going to confuse you a little bit because yes, you're going to do a push-up while you first engage your core. Yes. Okay. Not 100% like hand crushing puss up though, because puss are
hand crushing. I mean, like, I don't know if that's ever a thing.
As long as you can let go after that and lengthen and stretch, then more power to you.
Yeah, get it. Okay.
But you don't need to be like all the way tight for those things, because you're also moving. So your pelvic floor can be like super stiff. Same thing with your core too. Because some people over-contract, and over-contracting then lends to like a gripping and sometimes bearing down. And now you're putting pressure downward into the vagina or out into the abdomen. And that's the opposite way. I'm getting off track. We can go back to that, because I do think there were some questions about prolapse.
We'll hit prolapse in a minute. Okay, that's really interesting. So it's sort of like for a microsecond, as I'm first engaging my abs and exhaling, my pelvic floor is a bit engaged, not can crushing, but it's engaged. And then it kind of chills out. It doesn't fully relax again, does it? Or does it?
Yeah, at a hum, like a hum, like a 25%.
Just a little. It's there.
Just a little. Because it needs to support you. It needs to support your organs, because as you're putting the milk into the fridge or whatever, right? Like those are, they're heavy-ish and it's moving. So that there's pressure going down onto your pelvic floor. And so you do need a little bit of support from below.
Okay.
Especially that you also have a baby in there. But what should eventually happen is this, it should happen naturally. Because as we breathe, every inhale that we take, we know our diaphragm, or maybe not everyone knows, as we inhale, our breathing diaphragm right at the bottom of our ribs goes downward, actually, when we inhale. And then when we exhale, it comes back up. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, if you've ever done breath work or yoga or whatever, like you strive to have a good mobile diaphragm, right? You're not like, yes, I want a tight diaphragm.
Right. Because you need it to move. Yeah.
Move. The same thing goes for your pelvic floor. When you inhale, the pelvic floor goes down a little bit. When you exhale, it comes up a little bit. So they should be moving together with every breath that you take, very minimally. Like you're not going to feel it like bounce around down there. and then that should also happen when you naturally engage your core, when you go to pick up your groceries and then you start to breathe. You should be breathing the whole time, but you're breathing as you're doing, putting the groceries away and starting to cook and all the other things. So if we have the pressure of the baby, sometimes we need a little reminder, because it's just more weight to do the puss up and the pelvic floor contraction. Yeah. Right. When you first do it and engage, and then just keep your core and your pelvic floor on as a hum, as you're putting away the groceries.
Okay. And then when you go and you sit down on the couch at night to relax, you should be like back to baseline. Things can relax.
Let it go.
You know, you don't need to be holding anything there. Right. Okay. So this is like a very dynamic movement. That's a lot of it's happening without us even being able to perceive it. But of course, if you feel like you're having any problems, this was actually a question that came up too, was do I need to go to a pelvic floor physical therapist even if I'm not having symptoms? Which I don't know what you'd say to that, but it seems like it'd be a little bit tricky, right? To like just randomly go to somebody if you didn't seem like you were having symptoms. But just like I experienced, I did not know that I was having these kind of dysfunctional movement patterns until I saw you. So, I mean, if you have the luxury or if you can, why not? It's not like it's going to be harmful.
No, it's just going to give you information, right? Like it's going to tell you, are you holding your pelvic floor? Because we also do the assessment standing, if you're comfortable with it. And you're just standing there and our fingers in there, and we'll be like, hey, did you know that you're contracting your pelvic floor while you don't need to? Okay, now you pick it up, and hopefully we feel you do a pelvic floor puss up as you lift the weight. And hopefully we don't feel you bear down and push downward when you lift up the weight. Have you ever noticed that? Like, pay attention to yourself next time you lift up something heavy. It's very, very common to actually either hold your breath or bear down, push downwards or outward in the abdomen. And I'm going to try to weave this back into what we were talking about. Now on the postpartum side, whether you have a vaginal delivery or a cesarean birth, we still want to decrease the amount of pressure that's going down or out. Right. We don't, especially if you have an incision from the cesarean, you really don't want to push your abdomen out. So on the postpartum side, it's the same freaking rules. Don't do things that push or tent your belly out. Don't do things that you're holding your breath or bearing down. I guess I'm going to pop back to the, like, the preparation, the difference between preparation between a vaginal birth and a cesarean birth. In a vaginal birth, we're doing a lot of preparation for pushing, right? And if you're planned cesarean, then you don't have to do that, right? You're just like, let's go, kind of nice. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about your brain's and body's ability to connect the two and decide, huh, am I actually relaxing so that bear down can, like, be effective?
Yeah.
Or we don't, if you're also having a cesarean birth, you don't have to work on any, like, pelvic floor mobility in particular for the actual stretching of the posterior fourchette or anything like that, the perineal body. But as you now know, your pelvic floor does need to function and be mobile.
Always,
whether you are pregnant or not. So right. Just because you're going to have a cesarean birth does not mean that you can just, you can do whatever the heck you want. This is your body. But if we're talking about, like, fully functioning at its prime, like, just because you're going to have a cesarean birth doesn't mean that you can get by with a tight pelvic floor, right? Because that might affect right. you otherwise.
And would you say too, I think there's a misconception sometimes that people had they had a cesarean birth, so they don't need pelvic floor PT. They're like, nope, I didn't have a vaginal birth. I don't need it. That's not true though, correct?
Correct. Especially like if you had an emergency cesarean, like there was, you know, laboring down and bearing down, then that, but also you held the baby for 10 months. And also, like, I don't know if any of you have seen that little video where they show all the layers that are cut through for a cesarean. Super cool, but really puts it in perspective of, like, oh, maybe, I guess in you wouldn't have to see a pelvic floor particular therapist, but this is our jam, but for scar tissue remediation.
Yes. Let's talk. So there were some questions about that. Tell me, what is scar tissue remediation? A lot of people, unfortunately, don't even know what it is, and they've had cesareans. Some people are really on it. When do you think they should start? What is it? How to do it, etc.
Yeah. Scar tissue remediation, there's different ways to do it, different, like, thought processes, but it's mobilizing your scar and mobilizing your scar from a manual perspective, just straight up physical manual perspective, and also connecting to your scar if for any case, but often in a lot of people's cases, it's not a good reminder, you know, for some people.
Yes, there might be trauma there.
What'd you say?
Yes, there might be trauma there.
Yeah. So making the two the connections between brain and body is first and foremost. Our nerves regenerate, and it helps if we put hands on to say, hey, wake up also. But the scar tissue, because of all of the different layers that they do cut through, for cesarean, we want those to move. Scar tissue doesn't contract the way that muscles do. But they are attached right next to the muscles, right? They are a muscle that they cut through, or a fascia, or a fat, or whatever. There's a bunch of layers. So you want to get all of those things moving and grooving and sliding on one another. Scars look really good on the outside, and that's one huge step. You also want to be able to feel how they're moving on the inside. And so that's where we come in and we do our hands-on work manually. We do, personally, we do work here with gua sha, and then also with breathing, because you want to move it from the inside and putting it in different positions and stretching. And because, like, you might feel like, I had my appendix out, and I was a gymnast. So, like, every time I did a back bend, I would feel it, right? So mm-hmm. if you just feel my appendix scar right now, just sitting here, it's not a big deal. But in my life, I needed to be in a back bend. And so that's where we would do, you know, mobility there and hands-on work there. So taking that into account too, and doing the scar tissue mobilization in varying positions.
That's a really interesting point. I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about doing it in different positions. I've heard about, you know, using something really light touch, and then you kind of go to these different steps and stages. And this is all information that, you know, you can find online, or you can ask your pelvic floor PT for sure. But, like, doing it in maybe, like, laying on your side, laying on your back, standing, like, that is such a good, just duh, that makes total sense. It's going to act and behave different parts of it will be tenser than others. And especially because, yeah, I think it's 7 layers. How many layers is it? It's a lot. So you have to think about a little bit of a layer of that kind of crunchy white scar tissue in between each of those. And we're trying to get it to be the healthiest that it can be so that it doesn't cause any adhesions further on, because scar tissue can grow, which is really kind of wild and weird. And it can move and like not move like an animal inside you or something, but I mean that it can spread and infiltrate. And yes, spider webs eat webbies, and it starts to kind of move up and around. And so it's really just part of the health of the incision mark of where the baby was taken out on your abdomen to get it to move freely and not have these adhesions.
Yeah. And doing it in different positions, like you said, it just makes sense. Like gravity affects your body differently in different positions. And we all have different needs for our body's positions. And honestly, like massage work, a lot of what's happening is we're like squishing water out of the area, which doesn't make it sound like we're doing much. But it does, and it mobilizes it. But then you do have to you do have to continue to move that area. So just laying down for scar tissue or for any kind of body work, just laying there and then not doing maybe some breathing underneath it or some moving. Again, you can't see me, but I'm doing a nice body roll with this big belly. really helps your brain to recalibrate what's going on and remember that new range of motion that you have. Same thing goes for if you had any tearing during a vaginal birth. We do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Both of which teach you to do at home too. There's different ways to do, like perineal tears, like scarring there. There's different ways to do, scar remediation there, different techniques. You can use your hand, you can use a wand, internal, external.
Yeah. So there's lots of
so important for so many reasons. If it's pain or if it's function, cause like I said, scar tissue doesn't function the same. The muscles next to it can, but you also have to reawaken them because our bodies are really, really good at protecting themselves. So anywhere that there was some sort of change or trauma, our body's going to be like, nope, don't move there. Like just actually exit out of my brain.
Yeah, and stabilize it.
Yeah, a lot of people will experience that, you know, where they kind of disassociate from their scar areas or from their shoulder injury, you know, just putting it outside of birth. But
is it true? Well, I think a lot of people will wonder this, that if you've had a tear, a vaginal tear, a perineal tear, that you're more likely to tear in that exact same spot in a future birth, or that you're maybe not likely because it's so firm. I don't know.
I think
you know what I mean?
No, I know. I totally know what you mean. Luck, some luck of the draw. I understand what you're saying. Like the tensile, the integrity there is like, well, it could be firmer, so harder to tear, or it might tear right next to it. But also, did you tear? And so now you're like, oh, I'm aware of this. So now I'm going to work on it. And so now you don't tear because
that's a good point.
You now have become privy to this, right? So like, one of my big goals is to work on pelvic floor mobility with people way before they even need to. Like, we don't want to have to wait till postpartum. So you're like, oh, it's now making me pay attention. You want to be prepared for it, but also it's not just only preparing for birth. There's plenty of people that don't want to have babies. They still need to still have good pelvic floors, you know, like.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know the statistics on that one. I know that I have a good number of patients who have torn on their first and don't tear on their second, or didn't tear on their. It's all a mixed bag because
all over the board. Yeah. One other follow up question, really quick, before we move on to something different, is that for scar tissue mobilization of the cesarean scar. Just back to that real fast. I had a particular question for an apron belly, which means like where the skin and of the belly hangs over the incision. Mm-hmm. She was saying it was really difficult to do some of these work exercises because you can't really see it, can't really access it. Do you have any tips or tricks for that? Or I guess maybe it'd be better to just have somebody else be doing it. I don't know.
Well, both, because even if you do have someone else do it, you should do it at home too.
Okay.
But a lot of that, a lot of it, we call the shelf too, like on top of it. You could work actually above the scar. Of course, hey, I don't know you. Get yourself assessed by your own doctor. This is all
not medical advice. Yes. Yeah.
But what I have found is actually a lot of restriction right above the scar. So you might feel that kind of crunchies, and starting to like mobilize that out helps to help with that apron or that shelf. But yeah, you got to work in a mirror, because in the beginning you can't feel it. So mm-hmm. you want to work in a mirror. You also want to be gentle enough that you're not messing. One of my girlfriends, she was like going to town with the gua sha. I'm like, whoa,
yeah.
Relax. But I get it. She wanted to get into it, but you also don't want to cause a ton of inflammation. A little, never mind. That's a whole other topic, but
it's a balance. Yeah.
So yeah, I would say go to a pelvic health specialist, pelvic floor physical therapist, pelvic floor therapist in general. So they can teach you how to do it, because you don't want to just be like willy nilly down there.
Yeah. That's a good point. Okay. Yeah, so let's go on. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. What'd you say?
I said, yeah, that is something that we work with a lot, that apron or like shelf.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So one real quick one here before we get into like maybe a longer answer is it truly unusual to maybe leak a little bit when you're pregnant and you sneeze or you cough? Is that something mm-hmm. that definitely needs to be addressed? What do you think?
Yeah, any of that? Right. Oh my gosh. No, it makes freaking sense. You have a human sitting on your bladder. Like, it just doesn't have to stay like that, right? It's a little harder when you're pregnant because you just straight up have a thing sitting on you. but there are so many other things that can be contributing to that, that it's not just the baby, right? It can be bladder irritants. It can be your pelvic floor muscles are really extra tight. And as we know, tight muscles are not rendered strong. I feel like we should have like a yay. like a fill in the blank. Our tight muscles are strong. So they might not really be holding the pee very well.
Mm.
And we would need to find the reason why those muscles are so tight, right? But let's normalize talking about it, because just because it's a thing that happens doesn't mean that it's a thing that has to happen forever. Or at least we go through all the tests and we're like, all right, cool. Your pelvic floor is fully functioning. You're strong. You're flexible. You aren't eating or drinking things that are pissing off your bladder. Your body mechanics work great. You're not super like mentally stressed out. That's causing a sympathetic nervous system regulation issue and telling your body to pee. Your baby's just sitting on your bladder.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about it. Right. And then you're just like,
there's a certain level in pregnancy where it's like, okay, given the mechanics of all of this. And then, I guess in the absence of all those other factors, and it's hard because like you and I we're very like root cause based, and we look at the body in such a functional way that it's difficult to deduce these answers sometimes out of one thing because it's so individual. But I guess in a short way, you could say, okay, yeah, in pregnancy, this might happen. It doesn't necessarily mean there's something wrong beyond the fact that there's a baby on you, but it shouldn't last, right? That's where the problem comes in, is when women are just continually having incontinence, leaking, or, you know, when they sneeze, or just in general. And that's something that would necessitate getting, you know, seen by a therapist. And then also we had a question that was about fecal incontinence, which means that there's fecal leakage, or, you know, you're pooping a little bit, bowel leakage. They're saying, you know, please talk about that too, because it's not covered usually like urinary incontinence. So what do you think? I mean, same, it's just of the anus, or is it different?
Yeah, it's same. I think that there are other components that factor into that, like your consistency of your poops, right? If they're wetter, they're going to be easier to leak, right? There's what is your anus, what is your butthole doing after you poop? Does it contract back to normal after it's been all open? Or does it kind of just stay open? And so maybe you get a little smearing, a little, right? Is your tendency to when you pick up that box, do you bear down? And so you push out a little poop or pee, right? They're very, very similar. There's just the diet component. Well, the diet component also affects your bladder too, because you could be eating spicy food and that makes you leak more, you know? So it's just, they're pretty similar beyond okay. the, I don't know if anyone saw the butt wiping technique I just put up recently. Try
I
it out.
Do that, and I was really intrigued by that. I feel like it would tickle.
A little pressure. I do want to do like a follow-up. Please be honest, who found extra remnants after this circle wipe technique? Like, just, you know.
And if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you're like, what are you talking about here? I will link that particular reel in our show notes here so you can see what Dr. Lauren's talking about. It's a new way of wiping your booty hole that might be better.
I don't know if it's new. I was telling my friends about it, and it, you know, it's mind blowing for them and my patients.
It's pretty new to me. I've never seen that before.
Well, I mean, also I talk to people about hemorrhoids and anal fissures a lot, and we work with that too. So like that is a big component to it. But
there is a question about hemorrhoids. Speaking of, it says any connection between pelvic floor and hemorrhoids.
There you go. Yes. So hemorrhoids is one of the causes is pressure, right? Which is why they happen oftentimes after a vaginal delivery, because of all of the pressure going down. It's also why this happens with a lot of high stressed people, because of the pressure and pressure can be either pressure that's bearing down or pressure that's like squeezing closed a can, right? Like if I get all like physics that would be getting into. So yes, your pelvic floor, if your pelvic floor tension is really, really tight, your anal sphincter may not be able to contract and relax as well as you would like it to. Or if you're, like I said before, your tendency is to bear down, then you're going to bear down and push, can potentially cause hemorrhoids, right? If I go back to the tight sphincter, and you're trying to poop through a tight sphincter, that's going to be harder to do and potentially cause a hemorrhoid. So they're it's all...
It's also connected. It's almost like any... It's like a car mechanic tune-up spot. Like maybe we should just all go to pelvic floor physical therapy at some point and say, hey, are you peeing right, pooping right, picking things up right? Or, you know, because you just – I guess and if you're not having any symptoms, it would be less, you know, hurried or urgent seeming. But
the point of like the tune-ups, right? Like your car, you take it in even if there's no – issue right. Or go to the dentist, or you go like we do it for other things. You go to the eye doctor, right? But like, yeah, not and just physical therapy in general, like that's where we are in our practice here is we're out of network. So we work with just a lot of people just straight up off the street and they come in and they're just really interested in their health and wellness because they're moving their bodies every day and they want to know what they're moving. They're doing it efficiently or effectively and well for them. There were two other things I just remembered.
Two pregnant ladies trying to talk about stuff. And sorry, if bear with us here. You guys, our brains are just a little scattered.
Of like normalizing the peeing or leaking, right? But also postpartum, like, that also, so it makes sense if you have a baby sitting on your bladder and you're told to like up your water like a million times, right? And then secondarily, or on the other side, the postpartum side, A, you just carried a baby for a really long time. B, especially if you had a vaginal delivery, you just pushed a human out of your body. Like, don't beat yourself up if you have some prolapse or some incontinence, whether it's fecal or urinary leaking afterwards. Like that straight up makes sense to me.
Okay. So then what do you know, we have a lot of prolapse questions. Speaking of that, like what is your advice or to normalize it? You know, there's like mild prolapse. Can that be reversed with rehab? What do we think about prolapses?
Yeah. So my job is to work with people to if you're talking about mild prolapses and does PT help? Yes. Because we avoid surgeries. Right. And then we also talk about the did we heal it or are we managing it?
Mm-hmm.
I am someone right now who doesn't have prolapse. I am still managing it because I'm preventing it, right? So everyone from day one, it's good information to have all of this. So you either prevent a prolapse or you're managing one that you have and improve it, because you can improve your pelvic floor strength based on where your baseline was at. Were you too tight? Were you not, you know, the muscles were not, quote unquote, not tight enough. Ugh, I hate that. I got to figure out a different way to say that. But
yeah, I know what you mean though.
And then you change from there. So was there a question about prolapse, or just like,
yeah, what do you, okay. So I guess maybe just to give a real quick definition for people who don't really understand it. And then what is the sort of the management, or how does it look? And then I know that people are offered surgery or, you know, mesh.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch of different things. What's sort of your wish for the world or people who are experiencing prolapse, and how do you manage it? Is it just more core stuff?
Sometimes. So prolapse is when something is coming down into your vaginal canal or all the way out of it. It can also happen through the rectum too. So, like a cystocele is when the bladder is pushing on the front wall of the vagina, and then the front wall of the vagina is coming down. And so sometimes you'll see or feel a little bulge at the opening of the vagina. And then there are varying stages as to how far that has fallen or how far that is being pushed down. Those two words matter. How far it has fallen means there's not enough support to hold it up. How far it has been pushed down means there's too much pressure from above squishing it down.
Okay, so there's two different ways that a prolapse can begin. Push or fall?
Yeah. And I mean, and it all, yes. Let's go from there.
From the mechanics standpoint, yeah. That's interesting. I didn't really think about that. That yes, it could be that maybe there was like a weakness in some of the ligaments that hold the uterus up. Say if it's a uterine mm-hmm. prolapse, for instance. Or
fall. It
could be that your pressures are pushing inappropriately and causing it to have to come out, because the pressure is really like the crux of all of this, is what are we doing with and how are we managing our pressures, which are natural and normal and they come from our breath and all sorts of things. And then of course, now if you've pushed, but you can still have a prolapse with a cesarean. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because what was your normal everyday life also?
Right.
Were you that person who did bear down unbeknownst to you really, or were you that person that was stressed and holding the breath? And if you hold your breath for a long time, it eventually just pushes down usually.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I have this little thing, like the little rubber chicken, and I don't know if anyone else would see this. It's like a rubber chicken and you squeeze it and like an egg comes out of it.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. You see those at like the checkout stand at, I don't know, gas stations.
So that is like the equivalent of like the pressure system causing a prolapse, right? So someone will come to me, they have a prolapse, and they actually have excessively tight pelvic floor muscles, or really, really, and or really, really tight core. Not someone that usually you would think off the top of their head to have a prolapse, but that's because there was like a toothpaste squeeze kind of effect. Squeeze it, and there it goes. I mentioned cystocele. That's not the only type. You can have a uterine prolapse. You can have a lot of different types of them and different grades. Also, just the vaginal tissue itself, they have what's called like the actual tube, has what's called rugae, these little lines, which allow it to lengthen and expand and allow things to go in and out, right, of different sizes. And so sometimes that tissue, especially early on postpartum, is just like a little bit more saggy because it just got stretched out.
The first time I looked at my vagina after, which I don't suggest doing this, I think wait a little while, like wait 6 months or something to look at yourself in a mirror. But that's exactly what it was. And I didn't understand. And I was freaking out until I saw my midwife, because I was like, what is this? This did not used to be here. And it was just rugae sitting basically right at the introitus, which is like the entrance of the vagina. And mm-hmm. But I could see it. And there was used to be nothing there that I could see. And I was like, what am I? Because, you know, it's just kind of nerve wracking.
Yeah, it's different. But it also makes sense because you had vaginal births.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was the exit.
Yes. And since, I have to say too, I've had 3 vaginal births, and that's no longer there when you look at it. I mean, I'm sure that now as I'm pregnant, it's going to change again and after the birth again, but my point is that it's gone back, I guess. Mm-hmm. Luckily, you know, I feel fortunate in that way, but I worked with you and I learned about how to breathe and do my pressures and stuff too. So maybe I wouldn't have been in this position had I not.
Yeah. Who knows? Right? Who knows? And then there's also our genetics and how collagen, elastin do we have, you know, in us to allow that to come back up or not. So prolapse, that's what prolapse is. There was a second part to that question.
How to manage what are you doing about it? And can it be actually fixed? And I know this is that it's always being managed, right? But you can abate the symptoms or you can get back to a place where it's not falling out or pushing into the...
Totally.
Yes. Okay, great.
So you change if you're a person that is the squeezer, you got to change that, right? And we find out why you're squeezing. That's the whole assessment part, why you're squeezing and bearing down. If you are the person that doesn't have the support because maybe the pelvic floor muscles aren't taut enough or the ligaments above have been stretched or the fascia, there's all kinds of stuff that's holding all of these organs up, right? That can be time that we need to wait for. That can be exercises that can help to lift everything. Again, changes potentially in your breath and your pressure system, because if you're just always putting pressure down on those ligaments that are already stretched out, they're not going to come back up, right? So pelvic floor and core and outside body strength too, because if your outside body is weak, like I said in the very beginning, your inside body, your pelvic floor and your core are going to be I got to help somewhere.
Yeah.
So just getting up off of the ground. If your leg is stronger, your innards don't have to do as much. And then one really good one is getting inverted. If you know you're going to go to Costco and that's going to take you an hour, lay upside down for a little bit. I mean, as long as you don't have, you know, vertigo,
blood pressure, et cetera, et cetera. We're not your doctors.
Kind of like preparing for it and then also doing it when you get back. So however you like to get inverted, I think the most chill way is laying down with your butt elevated and then your legs elevated, maybe on the couch. So you're laying on your back versus the spinning babies inversion on your elbow. That's just not, you can't hang out there as much. Or spinning babies does have the one where you put the ironing board. I always forget that word. Ironing board.
Oh.
But think about it, off the couch and then you lay on it like a inversion table.
Yes.
You're just changing gravity. You've had gravity on your pelvic floor the whole day and you're changing gravity and having gravity help to pull things back in. While you're there, you can do some push-ups maybe, so long as you're not someone who has an excessively tight pelvic floor. Because push-ups would not be helpful for you if you have an excessively overly tight pelvic floor.
Because that's not the thing you need to work on. You need to work on getting to that point of being able to relax it all the way and having the opposite end of that health. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. I feel like I should have said in the very beginning, push-ups are not the only answer.
That's the t-shirt. Push-ups are not the only answer. So people will be like, what?
There's more to life than push-ups. There's so many. Another management thing, if you're still having trouble, which is totally fine, whatever, is to get some support, to get a little crutch. So there are things called pessaries. And some are, you can just, get online, and some that are more official, you get fit at your, depending where you live. Usually with your medical doctor, some physical therapists do it in some states. We don't do it here. And what that is like a sports bra for your organs, for your vagina. So it's something you stick up in your vagina and they're different shapes and it just holds things up for you. And so that can be a temporary thing. It's holding things up for you to take some of the weight. So now you can work on your pelvic floor strength and your function and your coordination. And so you're not bearing down. And then you can eventually get rid of that, or you stick it up there and that's what helps you get through the zoo. Walking around the zoo there's different versions of that. So that's, you don't have to go to surgery. Some people do, because if it's the hangy one, right, where your ligaments, your fascia isn't really supporting you anymore, we don't know how much tensile integrity is left in those tissues until we wait a while. Postpartum is forever, but to get a good understanding of where you're at as far as your tensile integrity, your tissue integrity, it's 2 years-ish. If you didn't have a baby within those 2 years again. Right. So
wow.
There are steps. You don't have to jump directly towards mesh or hysterectomy or anything like that. If that is where you want to go or you're suggested to go, pelvic floor therapy is still super beneficial because you want to have good muscle tone in there for them to work with. And to also make sure that, you know, you don't get the surgery and then you just bear down again and push it.
Same again. Exactly. Like there's a reason this happened. Now, yeah. What you're saying is if it's because of the ligament laxity, which is like a connective tissue strength thing that we can't sometimes, you know, really correct at that point, you need to have surgery. Okay, cool. But if you don't really know what your reasoning is for your prolapse and then you go get the surgery, it just may not be root cause. It's not actually going to help anything and you're still going to end up with the problems. This is like our whole point of everything in medicine, Dr. Leah and I, which by the way, she's camping in Tennessee right now. That's where she's gone. But it's like, it's so frustrating, right? That people would be given this option without discussing all of these factors and how they could potentially make a choice that would be, you know, getting a hysterectomy is a really, really big deal, or even getting a mesh placed is a really big deal. And there's problems with those too. If you need it and you've taken all the steps and it's a hierarchy of treatment. It's a hierarchy of the ways that we go in with intervention. And so there's a time and a place for everything though, is basically what you're saying. And it depends on what's happening for you and you need to get that individual help.
Yeah.
Okay. So some other quick questions here, because we need to wrap it up, but this is such a good, juicy episode. I love it. So, okay, this might not be actually that quick. Pubic symphysis dysfunction? Pregnancy. That's a really hard one. I've been so lucky, knock on wood. I have not had that. Have you had, do you have any of that happening?
No, I don't. I've also been lucky as well, but also I'm educated on this, right?
Yes, you know what to do. So what do we do?
So what you do, usually it has to do, pubic symphysis dysfunction, first of all, is your pubic bone in the front is the connection of actually two bones. Like your pelvis is made of three bones, actually, the two sides and then the sacrum in the back. And so where it connects together in the front, there's a little cartilage piece, and that's your pubic symphysis. And that area is intended to move to help open to get the baby out, but it might move a little bit. Can't say too much. It just might move a lot while you're still pregnant with all the different, you know, laxities going on and the different weight. And now you're walking differently and all this stuff. So there's a shifting happening at the pubic symphysis going on. And so the quote unquote fix to it is to not have that part move so much, right? And it's muscles that attach to that area. That attach to the pubic symphysis, pubic bone area, and to the whole pelvis itself are going to be your best bet to keeping that part more stable, so it's not rubbing around and moving so much.
It stable. It's not that it's getting. It's maybe that it's like kind of loose. It's too loose. We need to keep it in place. It's not that it's getting pulled out by muscles, or I guess it could be both. Who knows?
It could be both. So it's like it can be like an imbalance situation. Which is why, like, if you do like stand on your one leg to put your pants on, a lot of people will have issues there because you're just using muscles on one side of your body. Oftentimes, you're actually not using the muscles enough on that one side of the body, so the pelvis has no muscles to like keep it stable. Obviously, you're standing up, like obviously your muscles are on. So like that's kind of a dumb thing to say, like, oh no, your muscles aren't on, but like on effectively to prevent pubic symphysis dysfunction. So working on glute strength, because those attach to the both left and right and sides of your pelvis, your glute strength, your core strength, your pelvic floor, because if you grab a pelvic model, those are all attached to it. And then as long as you can, a lot of people say stay away from single leg exercises. But if you know how to do them well, because you have a pelvic floor physical therapist to guide you, then that can be a really good preventative measure, is to keep up your single leg strength. If you're not a strength person, you're like, nope, not going to do it. Salud.
Excuse me. My allergies are crazy.
Same. If you're not super into exercise, totally understandable. I haven't been in this pregnancy very into it. then you just might find issues happening, like when you separate your legs more or when you do things one-legged. So you could just avoid those things. That's an option. It's not usually the option that as a physical therapist that I choose. I'm like, no, you should be able to separate your legs. But prevention is glute strength, core strength, pelvic floor strength, which includes mobility as well. So this is not tight, squeezed butt cheeks that don't move, tight, squeezed pelvic floors and cores that don't move. It's also, you have to have mobility as well.
It needs to be the whole thing. Yep. And you said something there that reminded me of a conversation we had prior, which is about like, because you have a pelvic floor physical therapist, like, you know, you'll be guided to do these things, da, 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 which led me, or which was your response partially to the question that of, can pregnant women safely do things like CrossFit or heavy resistance training or weight training? And yeah. How, because, you know, you see these videos of these people doing these really hardcore things. My gut reaction was no. Like, no, this looks like it's bad for your pelvic floor and maybe it's okay for you and now you're 30s and 40s, but then what's going to happen when you're postmenopausal? Everything becomes relaxed, you're 60, and are we putting ourselves up for, you know, higher risk of prolapse or something like that? But your answer really surprised me and I'd love for you to tell people, I am not a gym person, I am not a weight person, you know, we all have our things in life and that's not one of them. I walk and I squat when I brush my teeth. That's what I do. That's it for me. So I don't know that much about this arena. And I was surprised by your answer. And I really want you to tell our listeners because it might surprise them too.
Yeah. So I work with a ton of CrossFitters and runners and exercisers in general. So yes, you can do this. And I think my answer was, yeah, if you have a pelvic floor therapist to help you through it, then go for it.
Yes, do it. But that was kind of your caveat was like, but you need to sort of know, because some people can be doing those exercises pregnant and they can be lifting, you know, deadlifting and doing all this stuff, but they know how to take care of their pelvic floor. They know how to engage properly, breathe properly, brace properly, and have that full health so that they're not just like bearing down. They're not putting that pressure inappropriately. They're not compensating in some sort of a weird way that they're unaware. They're actually very aware and they're working with somebody. And so that is sort of, and you know, not everybody's going to have this luxury. That doesn't mean that everybody who doesn't have a pelvic floor physical therapist is doing it wrong. It just means that right. Exactly. It just means that like in your professional opinion, yes, you totally can be that person. And it's obviously better if you have that knowledge, if maybe you've been obsessed, you've worked with somebody at some point so that you're protecting it properly and you're really being mindful of these things. And then you can do it totally safely, which I'm like, wow, I really just truly didn't know that because I figured it had to be unsafe or not healthy or putting too much pressure. There's just so much pressure there already.
I mean, if you took two people that didn't know anything, were like 0% aware of their pelvic floors, and one went and deadlifted 400 pounds and one went on a 20-minute walk, okay, there's going to probably be more pressure in the 400-pound deadlifter person, right? I mean, we also don't know that 20-minute walk, is that like a super stressful walk that they're just holding their breath and bearing down? Like, you know,
yeah,
it could be. Also, if you're someone that's going to deadlift 400 pounds, you should take on responsibility to seek out help that you're doing these things well, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to, it's an athletic event. So is dancing. So is Pilates. So is yoga. So is raising children.
Seriously. Right? There we go. That's my athletic event. Just having kids.
Just having them. So like, it's kind of your responsibility, but yes, if the person knew of nothing, there's going to be more pressure in a 400-pound deadlift than in a walk around the block, most likely.
Yes, but this can be done safely, though.
Do it. And that's a lot. A big majority of our population here are very active people that want to stay active and then want to do high-level things postpartum as well. And okay, if that's what you want to do, we talk about it. We test you out. We see what you can do without harm, quote unquote, harm to your pelvic floor. But then also you get the, you decide, do you want to deadlift this 400-pound thing? Even though it might make you pee your pants, but you could do 350 without peeing your pants. Like, what do you want to do?
Yeah. Where are we at? This is personal responsibility. Totally. I love it. You got to put it in the hand of the patient. Okay, real quick here, some remaining ones. Vulvar varicosities. So meaning mm-hmm. a varicose vein that's inside of the vulva between the lips. It's not necessarily up in the vagina, but it's around, you know, the clitoris, the urethra, somewhere on the labia, minora, majora, whatever. I used to have one of these. I don't really know why I don't have it anymore. It's gone. But what it was after my first birth, and whenever I would get my cycle, oh my goodness, the amount of pressure, like that first day, first couple days of my period, I remember walking around, there's a grocery store in Encinitas called Lazy Acres, and I was walking around and I just had to sit down because the pressure that I was feeling in that vein in my vulva was like, it was just so uncomfortable. It wasn't pain. It was like achy and heavy and just awful. And I noticed it every single cycle and not really in between, luckily. And then poof, I don't know. I have no memory of when it was gone, but I don't have it again. What's up with that?
So there's a systemic component to that, right? Like how things are flowing and functioning and all of that through the body. That is outside of my scope, beyond the physical side of like you, there are certain amounts of movement that are helpful to keep all of the venous and arterial and lymph and everybody moving. Then there's also pressure. Again, like back to pressure. If you're someone who bears down and that's the reason for your pressure, or you're someone that squeezes and that's the reason for pressure, that's just pressure on top of pressure.
Yeah. And then with a uterus full of, you know, endometrial blood that it's about to shed, or a baby, if you're getting them in pregnancy or postpartum because you had a long pushing phase, or any pushing phase, really, it doesn't have to be long necessarily, but if it was really intense, or fetal ejection reflex or something like that, it's a lot of pressure all at once. And it can cause these things to become, you know, the wall of a vein, unfortunately, doesn't have the musculature that an artery does. And so a vein can kind of become like blown out, quote unquote, like where it just sort of expands and it becomes loose and sort of dilated. And that's like why we have varicose veins. We don't have varicose arteries, because the arteries have this, yeah, the arteries have this muscular pumping to them. But anyways, so I guess it could happen anywhere. Like basically we're just saying it's happening anywhere because the pressure is there.
Yeah. And where is the pressure coming from? Is it like just a venous thing, or are you adding to the pressure because of your activities that you're doing or the way you're holding yourself? There's also like, there are supporting like undies that you can wear, like shorts that give a little bit of compression that can be helpful. But on the physical therapy side, it's an assessment of how you move and how you breathe and how you hold or bear down or not. Again, it's like the same thing. I just keep saying the same thing, but yeah, it just shows everywhere.
No, I love it. Okay. And something that I don't think will be quite the same thing is, and I don't even know if you can say though, you know, what would be some exercises, postpartum exercises that people could be doing, like mm-hmm. whether they had a vaginal or cesarean, maybe it'd be different, maybe not. Maybe it's just the timing and waiting. Mm-hmm. longer for a cesarean post, you know, in your recovery phase. But is there anything that you were like, I really love these for some of the first core exercises of engagement back for postpartum women? Or is it just so individual that you can't quite say? Because I get that too.
Yeah. No, there are a few like basics that need to happen. Before I forget, I'm going to say the one thing that everybody should do if you're preparing for a vaginal delivery is learn how to breathe the poop out.
Yes. I just talked about this on something. I don't know what it was, but yes.
Good. So that's like super, super important. And this goes into play with your breath and your pelvic floor are related very much so, right? We talked about how your diaphragm works. If you are preparing for a vaginal delivery, your exhale is actually going to be on the quote unquote push, or the allowing of the uterus to push the baby out or your poop out. And that is opposite from what you would be doing for exercise. For exercise, you would be doing a pelvic floor core contraction on the exhale.
Oh, so interesting. Yes. And you need to exhale when you're going to be pooping anytime. So daily, hopefully, you get to practice this. When you're pooping, you get to practice using your exhale along with that deep relaxation and allowing it to just come out.
Uh-huh.
And that's what you're going to be doing when you're pushing a baby out. You are super duper duper relaxed. But normally when you're going to pick up something heavy, you're doing any kind of an exercise, you're doing a core exercise, when you're exhaling is the bracing of the core. That's a really good distinction. Okay. Did I say that correctly?
Said that correctly. The bracing of the core and the pull up, the push up as well. So,
oh, and the push up, of course. How could I forget?
Yeah. They are two different things. You don't want to do a push up when you're trying to get a baby out.
Nope, right? You sure don't. And that's what I was doing basically the whole birth.
I mean, you can use it to help slow. I think there was a question about like fast deliveries too. Like you can use your ability to do a push up to slow things down, which can help prevent tearing potentially or whatever. But for the most part, you're really not trying to push up
yeah.
when you're trying to get the baby out. So back to the exercises postpartum that are safe for both vaginal and cesarean deliveries or post deliveries. Is getting that connection to your core and your pelvic floor that we were just talking about. So whether you're sitting up, whether you're laying down, do wherever you can actually perform this correctly, or I don't like the word correctly, effectively, efficiently.
Optimally,
yes, thank you. When you inhale, your belly is going to go out. You're going to fill up with air. Your pelvic floor is going to fill up with air. So you can actually think of like your vagina opening a little bit too on the inhale. And then on the exhale, you're closing your vagina, doing the push up, pulling your core in and upward. And then inhale again. Let your belly out, open up your vagina, exhale.
You could do this even prenatally. Like I'm, you know, you and I are doing this, we're now pregnant, but I mean, it would actually probably be a really great mind body connection exercise for
totally.
Everything. Yeah. Totally. Okay. Cool.
Sometimes on the inhale that you're trying to expand, sometimes if you have a really tight pelvic floor muscles, you actually might need to bear down a little bit to help. Because like, think about it. If you're stuck up and you're trying to inhale and open your vagina, you might need a little extra help.
Push.
To
yeah.
I mean, like, don't go crazy and create a prolapse, right? But like a little bit, and then you close it back up. I don't like to do a bunch of them back to back like that. I like to do some of them on the exhale. You just regular relax, but some of them on the exhale, you do a push up because you got to go up to go down, you know? So, but mm-hmm. you just like hyperventilate and have a million repetitions. So that's like the very first thing that both everybody should do. And then you can start challenging your ability to turn your core on and a little bit of the pelvic floor on and talk or breathe.
Because having a little bit of core in, like belly button to spine, kind of like a little bit of of that, and then a little bit of push up, and then just talk and breathe and see if you can hold it.
Talk and breathe and see if you can do
I love this because it's so gentle, but this is how it should start. It should never be that we're like doing nothing, laying in bed, and then all of a sudden we're like hitting the gym at 6 weeks because we got clearance. Like, no, guys.
Clearance is... if you're trying to be active at 6 weeks, I suggest you get clearance from an active physical person, a physical therapist. It's just, there's different requirements, I guess, for your clear or return to sex, right? Like, whew, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Come to us so we can actually test out your readiness for that. And you can test out your readiness for it before you jump back in the sack.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever you want to do, whatever, if you're a workout, you're a hiker, you're a walker, whatever. Usually the OB and the midwife are checking for your uterus, that it's shrinking back up, that if you had any tears, that those are healing. They're looking for healing things. They're not necessarily looking for function.
Mm-hmm.
Those two exercises are like the main things to just that you can start immediately because they're so gentle. I will say don't go excessive with it and try not to tuck your butt under or curl your tailbone under because a lot of times we'll try to flatten our back to turn our core on. That's not really super necessary. So you just keep that little lumbar lordosis where you have a little bit of an arch in your back, your natural arch. And then you can start challenging it even more, turn your core on. Now your core is on, your push up being a little bit, 20%, maybe you're breathing and now you're moving your arms. Can you do that without tenting or coning or holding your breath? Can you move your legs one at a time? two at a time. And this could be laying on your side, laying on your back, sitting, standing.
Yes. And you're building up to it slowly. I love that. You're just sort of re-engaging. You know, remember, after we have a baby, all your organs are going back. There's a lot of stretching that has to sort of come back together. And so there's going to be the go-getter perfectionist people out there that are going to be like, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do it even like harder or firmer. Or I'm going to like really, no, it doesn't work like that in this case. Don't do that. Just be gentle and give yourself some like space and graciousness to be slow and recover. Yeah. And
actually productive.
Yes. Like,
the slowness of that recovery is actually going to set you up way better than you like hitting it hard. And again, I work with CrossFitters and runners and all these athletes and dancers and Pilates and, you know, like it just like cool it, make sure you got your shit under control and then go for it. It just, it's like I said, like your body's changing for like 2 years postpartum.
Yes.
Last forever. Right.
Right. And we just need to kind of honor that. And then also know that relaxin, that hormone that's in your body that was helping everything get loosey goosey so that your pelvis could open for the baby to come out, is still in your system for the length of the time that you're breastfeeding. So it's not as much, but it's still there. So we just need to be mindful and conscious with our bodies so that we don't hurt ourselves. Because yes, while we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, we feel really good. We're blah, 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 blah. But you know, what could happen later? And I don't know. I just feel like everybody kind of needs to chill out a little bit and go slow and also like, you know, get good advice. And so one thing I wanted to highlight too here before the end is that you in your practice, so you're going on maternity leave, but you have some awesome, really, or some other awesome practitioners, Dr. Linda, who can see pelvic floor PT. If you're in San Diego, or if you wanted to do virtual, because you do virtual and people are probably like, well, how the hell do you do virtual pelvic floor PT?
No, I'm just kidding.
What did you say? I missed it.
Put your vulva on the screen.
Get your webcam. Come on. It's old school. No, but so you can do it by assessing a lot of different things. Yes. Will there be internal work? Of course not. But there's still a lot that can be done, especially early postpartum, or even if it's prenatal, you know, getting not assessed, internally assessed, but you can still learn a lot from watching us on the screen with the way we breathe, the way we move, the way we do different things, asking a lot of questions and still giving really good sound advice. So that is an option, whether you're in San Diego or not, or maybe you're in San Diego, you want to have an internal appointment sometime postpartum, but you're like 2 weeks or something postpartum and you're not going to be getting in and doing that. And so this is just a really awesome thing that you do, because people, I think it's really overwhelming getting up and taking a baby to an appointment. And so that's a nice add-on.
Yeah, our grammar, like, no, too, you're welcome to come in. There are some people that come in 2 weeks, but yeah, we do a lot of virtual. And if you're interested, we also can walk you through like a self internal assessment. Of course, you don't have the numbers of pelvic floors to judge against or whatever, but we can still talk through it off camera or later on. And then you come back and tell us where you can do your own internal assessment as well. If you're, I just talked, where was she? She's in the middle of nowhere. She's like, no, I can't even get a pelvic floor assessment. It's like 3 hours away. I was like, okay, well, this is what you're going to do. And I want you to feel for this, and we can do as best we can. Right. I mean,
right.
So anyway, yeah. But like you said, body mechanics assessment, breath assessment, looking for the diastasis recti. We can see that super clearly. And then making changes, because as you've heard through this whole podcast, so much of it is how we act, like is how we move our bodies and how we've been doing for so long and how we choose to use our breath. So that's all easily done virtually.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you so much, Lauren. Can you tell people where to find you, where is best to learn more from you? And thank you for your time for this.
Yeah. You probably learn the most on Instagram or at Thrive Physical Therapy SD. Our website is sdthrive.com. And yeah, we're in San Diego. If you're here, we're right across the street from Balboa Park. So in Bankers Hill. And what else? What other information? You know, I feel like, you know, you can just Google my name and it'll pop up.
I highly recommend following her. I mean, it's your whole company with your husband as well, but it's just, you guys is, your Instagram account is very entertaining and funny, but also educational and also very real. You know, that's one thing I've always liked to admire about you is just, and I feel like
you'll see my dance is coming up. I just recorded one. I got to finish it up. So maybe sometimes it's this week. I've got a pretty big diastasis. I'm a pelvic floor therapist. I've got a pretty big diastasis as a pregnant person. Like, that has to happen.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And like, that'll be really helpful for people to see because they think and probably assume that, oh, no, you're going to have a perfect pelvic everything and your whole abdomen and everything's going to be perfect because, and it's like, well, you know, no, some of this has to happen in order for the baby to grow.
Yeah, but I know now, right? And I know that my left posterior left side of my pelvic floor is tight and I need to work on that. And yep.
It's all just information that we can use to empower ourselves and take better care of ourselves. So, okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Lauren. I really appreciate you being here and I will get all of that information in the show notes for our listeners.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.
Please remember that the ideas and views presented in this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. Now go have a wonderful day. You've got this.